Alison, I don't know whether you want to come in on what you think might be the issues in terms of teachers in the classroom and the sort of sense of risk-taking, as you, the phrase that you and Alan used with regard to Northern Ireland. I know you applied it when you talked about Powell's speech and things like that, but where's the controversy in the classroom? How does that play out, do you think?
Well, the first thing I would to say, partly in response to what Tony's just said, is that I think there is a question about what belongs it within British history and the way we teach it in schools. What I find interesting with the GCSE specifications is that, with the exception of AQA, the specifications only look at migration to Britain, and they're not terribly or necessarily always interested in where people have come from. And it's this sense that that's because it's fulfilling the requirement to teach British history within the GCSE specs. Therefore, we must only look at migrations to Britain. And I think that raises an issue for me about, so what is British history? You know, where does it start and finish? And we need people like Tony to help us on that. At the moment, we're rather at the mercy of the exam boards to tell us these things, and that's what we teach. AQA takes a slightly bigger view and includes emigration as well outside of Britain, and would see, for example, teaching about aspects of the British Empire as a legitimate part of teaching British history. And I sense in schools, Jason, I don't know whether you would agree, but at Key Stage 3, I see a lot of schools making fantastic strides in terms of diversifying the curriculums. But what I don't necessarily see is a more outward way of looking at British history. You've got your British history units, and then you've got your non-British history units. And there's a sense in which the British history units still, I think, can be quite insular, because we're still rather wedded to those sorts of narratives that we've always taught, which are quite political. There may be some, obviously, religion with Reformation, Civil War, industrialisation and so on. But I don't see migration much within the general narrative of British history still in school. So for me, that's a question about what should form part of British history in schools. In terms of sensitivities, I mean, there are many potential ones, I suspect, but we don't really have much research evidence about this, do we? We don't really know what teachers think. We don't really know what kids think about this. And that's a really big, a substantial gap in our knowledge. But I suspect that teachers have, and rightly so in lots of ways, have concerns about, are they going to use the right language? Are they going to stereotype groups in a way that's unhelpful? Are they going to include some groups and not others, and in that sense potentially cause offence or not be balanced? Or, you know, I suspect that those are all potential issues that they might worry about. And of course, that's linked to subject knowledge, because a lot of teachers won't have studied this at university. Are they going to talk about this in the right way? And there have been examples of things, haven't there, quite recently, where, do you remember the example 5 years ago, Jason, of the GCSE textbook on migration? And it was picked up in the press because of a single quotation that they used from Peter Fryer's book. And it was a quotation about the Africans were in England before the English, or something like that. And this was picked up and really kind of lambasted by certain commentators and historians for kind of indoctrination and overly politically correct. And the criticism focused just on that quotation. It wasn't looking at the textbook as a whole. It wasn't looking at the course as a whole. And so this is quite political and can become quite a hot topic. So I'm sure that teachers are aware of these challenges. And of course, if you've got a recent migrant in your classroom, I mean, it won't be too long before a teacher is teaching a recent refugee from Afghanistan, right? And if you've got a child in that situation who's currently living through the sorts of things that you might be describing about in the past, that requires a certain sensitivity in handling. Or at the other end of the spectrum, you may be teaching a group of children, some of whom may express some anti-immigration rhetoric that they've heard outside of the school. And as teachers, you need to use all the kind of pedagogical approaches in your toolbox to manage those things. I mean, I've spent pretty much my whole professional life encouraging teachers to be risk takers. I'm not saying it's necessarily easy. But what we don't particularly have, and I've never really encountered many examples of where in actual fact in lessons, going to these more potentially sensitive places causes huge problems, because kids are hungry for this sort of history. Kids are hungry for history that's relevant and that helps them to understand the world now through some kind of historical perspective. That they know that we live in a diverse society, and they are interested in how that has happened. So I think sometimes we might overstate the challenges. It seems to me that we have an obligation to teach these histories, and that what may be more controversial than teaching them is not teaching them. Because how are we equipping children to understand modern Britain and Britain in the future?
Tony, I think you want to, I feel you want to come in.
I would, I echo that. I mean, I suppose was in the first wave of Holocaust education, higher education in the UK, and I started from a sort of strong interest, but very limited knowledge level. And so I took risks. I'm sure I made some mistakes. And I think at a school level, we know now we're moving towards a sort of second generation of teaching the Holocaust, having part of the national curriculum. And we can see some of the less successful ways it was done. But I think unless you've got that foundation, you can't move on. And the alternative, as Alison says, would have been not to teach it at all, which was the problem we had before the 1990s, or very, very sketchily. But I think, again, just to say, right, we're not going to do refugee histories because they're messy or controversial, and that, yes, they will sometimes lead to heated discussions at school level, echoing what's going on around. Though, I think maybe naively, I think there is more of a progressive open space. The younger you have people, more empathy perhaps towards those who are forced to flee than perhaps the older generation. So there is this potential there for that empathetic engagement. So this is not to minimize the complications of teaching migration history, and it will inevitably become global history very quickly. But I think that's true of any scratch any surface of any very local place, and you'll find those international connections through trade, through movements of people, movements of ideas. So the old-fashioned sort of island history in isolation, which I'm sure there are those in certain sections of politics who would be very, very happy with, is so distorting as to be just propaganda and not history.
Like to sort of drawing some of those sort of issues that you've sort of put out there. I mean, there's the issue of the temporal framing of the way that, well, I think there's a broader sort of question about how young people themselves are going to explore this in a context. And actually, our duty as teachers, as Alison's sort of saying, is to provide them a more enabled context for that type of study. And I think that's where history has got a really valuable role to play. But I think you also, both of you, hinted at there's some temporal issues in terms of, so the framing that you were talking about in terms of the friar thing, which also reminded me of the Mary Beard Roman BBC sort of issue. There's a sort of desire to sort of push the stories of migration into the second half of the 20th century and actually deny a little bit around, yeah, the broader history of it. There's a spatial issue. There's an issue about spatial framing, about whether or not Britain is our unit of analysis. I am interested to sort of think about how do you talk about a global phenomenon like migration in the context of a nation state like Britain? And it's interesting in terms of the context of the most recent public discourse around migration with Afghanistan. Everybody's talking about the numbers of possible Afghanis coming to Britain. Nobody's talking about the number of Afghanis who are going to Pakistan. And actually, that context would actually really illuminate the context of the numbers that we're talking about in terms of Afghanis coming to Britain. So there's also a spatial sort of need for context. And I think that the last sort of thing I think would be helpful to get some feedback on is also the methodological considerations, because I think teachers might be more prepared to take risks if they feel as though that's, yeah, where the scholarship currently is, that actually this is how scholars are actually approaching this rather than the tabloid media or anything like that.